They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Japan's search for a new leader gets underway as fresh figures show the scale of the country's second quarter economic decline. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. 10 days after Japan's longest-serving Prime Minister Shinzo Abe announced he would step down due to declining health, campaigning is officially underway for his replacement. Cabinet Secretary Yoshida Suga is the frontrunner in the race, and this morning he said preventing further spread of COVID-19 and reviving the battered economy should be top priority. Today, revised figures show a slightly worse contraction in the second quarter than initially thought. The world's third-largest economy shrank 7.9% between April and June, compared to an initial reading of 7.8% contraction. Professor Seijiro Takeshita from the University of Shizuoka explains the main cause was a large revision to business spending.
This is not only because of COVID-19, but it's also due to the heightening tensions between the United States and China. Japan is right in the middle, and therefore the corporations are withholding their capital expenditure.
Now, the government has so far unleashed more than $2 trillion in the economy to battle the impact of the COVID-19 crisis. What will the next PM need to do? Will bolder action need to be taken to sort of reignite growth and get the economy back on track?
Mr. Suga, really, who's the top candidate, would have to rejuvenate Japan to induce new innovations, a new method of doing business in Japan. I think Mr. Abe did a very good job. Many people criticize him for not achieving structural transition, so it takes a long time to see whether that has really borne fruit or not. But I would like to think that whoever becomes a prime minister would have an additional methodology of getting us out of this 20 years of deflation, which, in my opinion, probably would have to resort to a new method of creating innovation within Japanese industries.
Professor Seijiro Takeshita, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Checking the numbers, Japan's Nikkei ended up 0.8% after the government approved a plan to spend some of its emergency reserves on securing a coronavirus vaccine. Meanwhile, European stocks are solidly in the red. France's statistics agency said it expects the economy to shrink 9% this year. It's been about a month since Washington announced its Clean Network program, which excludes Chinese technology from internet infrastructure used by the U.S. and other nations. Now Beijing has taken the wraps off its own global data security standards. The BBC's Celia Hatton has the details.
China's new Global Data Security Initiative appears to address many of the criticisms that Washington has leveled at Beijing and Chinese tech firms in recent months. China is calling on signatories to oppose data theft and the installation of so-called backdoors in their digital products that might allow for secret access to information. Mr. Wang said China would never ask Chinese companies to transfer data from overseas customers. The announcement comes as Washington is accusing China of gathering information on U.S. citizens through popular Chinese-owned apps like TikTok. It's seeking to persuade other countries to block Chinese apps and network technology. Critics of China's plan are questioning Beijing's sincerity, given its enthusiastic adoption of artificial intelligence to censor and monitor the internet activities of its own people. I'm the BBC's Celia Hatton for Marketplace.
From Chinese technology, now to labor. China is accused of detaining millions of people from the Uyghur ethnic minority and forcing them to work in factories in the Xinjiang region. But pressure is mounting on foreign businesses to ensure material they source from China does not benefit from that labor. According to reports, the Trump administration is considering a ban, which could come as early as today, on a range of products, including cotton, made from the region's raw materials. The BBC's Ed Butler has that story.
It really was one of the more haunting images to emerge in the news this month. Video of Meden Gapar, a former fashion model, a Uyghur, self-filmed in what looks like a Chinese detention center in Xinjiang in western China. In the video, he gazes silently at the camera, showing the handcuffs that chain him to the bed in a bare cell. Outside the barred window, we can hear this apparently endless propaganda announcement. The woman in Chinese is explaining the truth, as she calls it, of Uyghur politics and history. His family said he'd sent this film after guards accidentally left him access to his possessions, which included his cell phone. He hasn't been heard of since.
These new places are absolutely huge. They could house over 10,000 people.
That's the voice of Alison Killing. She's just completed a study for BuzzFeed News, which found that some 268 detention facilities have been built in the last 3 to 4 years in Xinjiang. China, of course, denies any program of detention. But what's revealing here is how Alison and her colleagues found the evidence, simply by looking on satellite photos via the Chinese search engine Baidu, which seems to have been deliberately blanking out the areas where these facilities were being built.
In 92 cases, we've got corroboration, which is journalists having visited. The biggest facility that we found can house over 40,000. There's about 268 that we know of that have been built since 2016, 2017.
Well, despite China's denials and all of this, Western governments and trade bodies are starting to organise a response, especially in the fashion and garment sector. Recent investigations have linked a number of firms, including Adidas, Lacoste, Ralph Lauren and the Apple Corporation, to alleged forced labour. None of those firms have acknowledged any evidence of slave labour in their supply chains, though. Craig Allen is the president of the US-China Business Council, which represents more than 200 US firms that do business with China.
All American companies would want to root out any supplier who might engage in forced labor. But we mustn't bifurcate the world because of a few bad apples.
Despite reports that there is increasing pressure from China on firms who would wish to comply with labor laws in other countries, Mr. Allen says that for now, businesses he works with haven't encountered this. I'm the BBC's Ed Butler for Marketplace.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.